If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
So you're a historian, huh?
I mean, I was, yeah. Although, now, everything just seems so upside down.
I don't like history. I mean, is that how shit really went down, or is that some yarn that the winners get to spin? And maybe that is why you're feeling like everything's upside down, because you are on the losing side.
Well, I take it history on the winner's side doesn't look much better.
Why the hell would you say that?
No, I just meant...
I'm fucking with you. Speaking of ancient history, you know, back in the day, I thought I had it all figured out. I'd built this system to protect my people. Another group would come at us, and I would line them up, do a little song and dance, and I would execute one of them. You know, just to make an example. Now, if I didn't get my people killed, then I sure as hell left them twisted up, broken. See, maybe the thing they needed saving from was me. Welcome to the winner's circle, kid.
Hey, Zedheads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Alex.
And this is The Cast of Us, episode 653.
And this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead, Dead City, season 2, episode 6. Bridge partners are hard to come by these days.
And yeah, we're Lauren Cohen's directorial debut episode.
On this show or in life?
No, I think it's in general. I think this was her directorial debut in across the board.
I love following directors and trying to pick up on certain directors' eyes. Like, I think when Ben Stiller is at the helm for Severance, you can really feel it. But when they bring in those guest directors to give you a dispatch, to give you a little bit of time away, it's really fun. I thought Lauren Cohen did a phenomenal job directing this episode. We'll get into it once we get to the episode, but I'm going to preemptively take my hat off. I thought she did a phenomenal job directing it.
I just looked it up. Yeah, this is her directorial debut. She has never directed anything before this. And you know what? And oftentimes when you see somebody who's making their directorial debut and if they're a television actor or actress, oftentimes they are making that debut on the show that they are working on.
For sure. Zach Braff. I think he may have done Garden State before he did an episode of Scrubs. Now, I'm sure Bill Lawrence let him cut his teeth on Scrubs.
I would think it would have to be on Scrubs. Tom Cavanaugh made his directorial debut with The Flash.
Oh, okay. Oh,
wow. Danielle Panabaker made her directorial debut with The Flash. Kevin Smith made... No, he didn't make his directorial debut with The Flash.
He did with Clerks. Something to be said there.
Oftentimes you see people who make their directorial debut, it's usually with the show that they're on because the producers are familiar with them
and they know,
their style. They know the beats. Exactly. Yep. What better project to direct than one that you were familiar with and involved with?
Absolutely. Yes.
So, but I agree with you. I think she did an amazing job with this episode and it's kind of nice. You know, we're playing catch up this week and, you know, we'll be caught up after this episode. It was kind of nice actually watching them back to back to see
really helped
to see the tonal difference between last week's episode and this episode. Because as much as I had issues with last week's episode, this episode was a step above quite a few steps above actually.
It restored last my week. Faith in the future and we'll get to it. Let's talk about the feedback from last week, but like, yeah, it restored my faith in what's to come.
I'm the same way. I kind of felt that sinking feeling and kind of understood.
I got closer to fear, and I was, okay, guys.
Last week.
Yeah, for sure.
And then this week kind of was like, all right.
I had a plan. Okay, cool. You realized you bit off more than you could chew in the first half, so you set the table again, and now you're just focusing on the stuff that was working the best. That's fantastic. Good stuff.
It's kind of like the analogy I made for the last episode was I get why we're taking this route. I don't understand why you got off at this off ramp
for sure,
but we're back on the highway now.
Right. Right.
So
you took an interesting scenic route, but we're on our way to Wacky World.
Well, if it was a scenic route, the scenic overlook was closed when we got there after last week's episode.
Now,
but
that's how you drip an analogy and a metaphor, folks.
Right?
Nicely done, Ben.
All right, let's do our feedback for episode 5 before we do this, before we dive into episode 6.
Start messing with numbers, man.
I believe it is my turn to start with the feedback. So starting off with Megan O'Connell, Megan says, I'm just so glad Narvaez is gone. She deserved what she got, especially after doing absolutely nothing about all the walkers groaning on the gate. Seriously, that scene was so far-fetched for me with this universe and with experienced people at this point. Again, glad she's gone. Me too.
Yep. The shambling of the Zeds and the absolute lack of action on everyone being chomped to death by the Zeds, both New Babylon and Groaners. I didn't understand why. It was the weirdest, most pathetic Zed attack I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I mean, we didn't really talk about this much last episode, but I kind of the nature people I understood. Like,
yes, they were accepting the fate. Like the mask whispers.
Their whole ideology is that the zombies are part of the natural order and they were there to protect everything that is there in nature. So they were welcoming becoming a part of that order. New Babylonians and everybody else, I didn't care.
No excuse for them. So yep. Megan, right there with you. Couldn't agree more.
100%.
Next up from Josie Bowen-Echtel. She says, I didn't enjoy how they showed Negan scraping the rat off of his foot. It seemed like they thought the viewers wouldn't grasp the concept that Negan was behind it otherwise. We're not that dumb. Come on. I love watching Negan this season. Pitting the Croat and the Dama against each other had a rewarding finish, but now I'm wondering what will happen because of her death. I appreciated Negan's response once he saw the children, and I so badly wanted to punch the Croat for gassing up the place. Killing those people was a terrible and useless choice. I'm glad to be rid of the park people. That moaning is awful. The gate scene reminded me of season 11 of Walking Dead with the Commonwealth. Inevitable that it falls, naturally. At least it took out Narvaez and the moaners, but I also think that was a lame end to Narvaez's character. She was stupid and continued to be stupid the whole time. Hasn't anyone realized you can't fuck with Maggie Rhee or Negan Smith and get off scot-free? Looking forward to next week and seeing what happens next. I think you were definitely right when you say it's a build-up season for the eventual battle for the city. Hopefully it's big. I'm thinking we'll get to see more of Brugal. He's intriguing. Okay, bye.
So I was right there with Josie about the scraping the rat off his shoes and making it seem
dumb.
Making it seem like we're not that dumb. Yes. However, after watching this week's episode, it was a total choice, and I now completely understand why they did it.
I hear exactly what you're saying, but I think they could have shown the scene with them without showing us the rat and just showing us the bloody boot, and we would have put two and two together anyway.
Oh, 100%.
So I could see both sides of that. I think I do at times feel like they are talking down to the audience a little bit. Like I don't know. I see what Josie's saying on that one.
Oh, yeah, I do too. There was something else in her email. Oh, I remember what it was. I completely forgot that Negan's last name was Smith.
I don't know why I always thought it was Jones. And I know it's not Jones because it's Morgan Jones. But yeah, I always forget what Negan's last name is. It's Smith. It's the most common, it's the most uncommon first name and the most common last name in the world.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. So well done. Thank you. Thank you, Josie.
All right. Next up, we have a piece of feedback from Deborah Ulmer. And Deborah says, "Hi, Ben and Alex. This episode was great, and they really cleaned house. I've been enjoying the quiet moments with Maggie, Pearlie, and Herschel. Their conversations are meaningful and well done. I'm glad Herschel finally opened up to Maggie about the Dhamma. I also appreciate how the show incorporates different cultural backgrounds and languages, reflecting New York's melting pot." Navarez, again, we're pronouncing it 15 Whatever. Different ways.
She's dead.
Yeah, she's dead. Went full psycho for the cause and got herself killed. Fittingly, by Roxana and her people. It served her right. Ginny's character took an unexpected turn. I thought she'd be a loyal friend to Herschel and ally to Maggie. Her change of heart came a little too late for my liking in saving Maggie, though. The execution hanging made me wonder if Maggie had flashbacks of Gregory, despite their differing circumstances. At least the foragers went out seemingly on their own terms and didn't even flinch when the walkers got them. Negan's talk with the Croat was effective. The Dhamma pushed him too far and he didn't save her. But I liked her as a villain and wanted to see more. Was Christos framed by Bruegel for the methane station attack? If so, was his plan to double-cross the Dhamma and turn to New Babylon all along? I'm loving the twists and turns in this show. Y'all have a good one. Take care. I did not even consider
never once, but
that Bruegel
logical sense
that Bruegel framed Christos
absolutely
for that,
and even knowing that the Croat would be because, and here's where Deborah, I think you make the best point. When watching the episode the second time, the first thought I had to myself was, really, he's going to cut the wire and be stupid enough to leave the knife directly under what he just cut? Are you kidding me? But if it was planted there by Bruegel, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
That's good.
I don't know why. I'm making all these weird theories about Negan, you know, being king of New York and are Annie and Josh really coming and all this other stuff. Never once, I'm really disappointed in myself, never once considered the fact that Bruegel framed Christos.
And that's why Podcastica has the best listeners in the world.
Yeah.
Nicely done, Deborah.
Yeah, well done. Well, nice pickup.
All right. Next up, we have an email from Colin Stillwell. Colin, last episode, you killed me. Let's see what happens here. Season 2, Episode 5. They really brought in the Bad Girls Club just to shake it down, huh? Dhamma and Navarez in one fell swoop. Can't say I'm going to miss those squawking twats at all.
Oh my
I
God.
Really thought Christos was going to push the NOS button on old Lucille so we would watch Deutschland Daycare go down in disaster. Methane and poor leadership can lead to a pile of molten dentures and fake nails. Remember, kids, only you can prevent elderly immolation. That's enough of those for the night. I really don't have much else to say about the episode. I really thought the Christos thing would draw out for the season with another gang violence type situation. Herschel's going to be all upset that his Dramadama is dead. The plot armor was strong in this episode. Negan's going to have an upset tummy and a stress headache from the methane poisoning, while Maggie keeps her head on her shoulders for once. I'd like to know what kind of caliber Navarez was packing in her 1911, because she almost broke her nose three times with that recoil. 4.5 out of 10. Would have been 6.6 out of 10 if somebody had slipped on the rat carcass and hit the marble. Anyways, peace. Keep on keeping on. See us.
drama dama.
You know, I appreciate some good wordplay, and Colin, keep it coming, baby. I am thoroughly enjoying reading your emails.
Yeah, he's been providing a lot of great entertainment for us over the past couple episodes. It's been great.
I
don't know
if I could just always request to read Colin's, but if I could, I would love it. I adore it so much.
It's so
it's
good.
It's got a flow to it. Like, it really moves along nicely. It's a gift.
Remember, kids, only you can prevent elderly immolation.
I mean, who comes up with this stuff, man? I love it.
Clearly Colin.
Colin.
Yeah. Amen. Thank you, Colin. It's always fun reading your emails. But that, of course, leaves one final piece of feedback, and that comes from our friend Steve Brown.
Hello, Ben and Alex. This is Steve, and this is going to be for TWD DC Season 2, Episode 5. The Bird Always Knows. Oh, what is the Croat getting dressed in the nines for with the soundtrack behind him? While back at Central Park, Hurdle Shoal, Maggie, and Pearly are still on their way to do whatever, get methane, scout it out. I don't know. I've lost track of this plan now. Now Maggie says they're going to go home. Okay, so that scene at the beginning was they lost power at one substation, so there's another group working against the Dama and her people? And by the way, it looks like Negan's just walking around the theater with Lucille too now. Oh, Nieves took over these people. I don't know what they're called again. Okay, so what kind of game are they running here with Jenny and this? With now, since Pearly reveals that he left Negan there to try to be their what, undercover man? Oh, Major, that's not a good idea. Holding Herschel as ransom, or Kit holding him as the and sending out Maggie to go get Negan and the Barazzi. I don't know. Oh, when Negan just used Lucille to kill the Walker. He said the Bird always knew, not knows, so not a mic drop yet. Wait a minute. So Christos is going to threaten Negan, and then his kids come in. Why did Maggie go and even talk to Pearly and Roxana? Just to say what? I don't understand that scene. Okay, seriously, Croat, you think that Christos and his people are going to be dumb enough to leave a knife behind when they... So the canisters the Croat sent with Negan were leaking the entire time. And the Croat gives Negan back his bat after killing all of Christos' people. But he left the families alive. That's nice. Okay, so Pearly just said it. The Bird always knows. There's the title of the episode, Mic Drop. Okay, so Negan's strategy's starting to work. He's starting to drive a wedge between the Dama and the Croat. Yeah. Okay, so the Major just killed Roxana. Oh, had her hanged, and now she's going to hang Maggie? Oh, the Foragers. That's what these people are called. That's what the subtitles just called them. Okay, I guess it's a good thing that Maggie's neck didn't snap immediately when that chair fell, but Jenny saved her, and now somebody put the chair back underneath her, and now Maggie goes into killing mode. She's going to save Herschel. And apparently, Roxana the Walker got loose from her noose real quick and just attacked Nieves. And once again, we see that... a dead person turning to a walker is just depending on how fast the story needs them to turn. Meanwhile, back at the Damas, somebody killed a rat. And the last survivor of the Foragers and of the New Babylon people are Jenny. Well, Jenny's bit, maybe. And Pearly, Maggie, and Herschel. Uh-oh, who's knocking at the door? Oh, Kim Coates and his people, the Brugal. Oh, she bit his finger. And he's going to let her burn. Oh, Negan killed the rat. All right, on to next week.
The alliteration coming out of feedback this week is wonderful.
Our fans are the best.
It's wonderful. Thank you, Steve, for the feedback, as always. I don't think the methane was leaking the entire time. They were in there for way too long.
That's true.
I think the Croat turned a knob when he walked in.
Okay, that makes sense. Also, Ginny was not bit. She was impaled by a rusty fence post.
Yes. Yeah.
So, it's so funny because, it does kind of look like a bite, but it's just an impaling. So always fun.
Yes. Yeah. Which we'll talk a little bit about this week, cause it looks like there's infection involved now.
Sure does.
Yeah, but yeah, I think there was something else. Oh, Steve's comment about how people turn to walkers as fast as the show needs them to turn.
Amen, buddy. Amen. And it's one of the time-honored traditions of the show, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. But thank you, everybody, for all the feedback this week. And keep it coming. We have, again, three more episodes three more opportunities to leave feedback, because you'll have six, is the episode. I know it's
6, 7, then 8 is the wrap up.
Let's not do what we did last episode.
There,
You'll have
24 hours.
Six that you still have opportunities to leave feedback for 6, 7, and 8.
Yep.
Which we look forward to hearing from you all about all of that.
Now at Verizon, we're locking in low prices for 3 years guaranteed on my plan. And you can get a single line for just $45 a month when you switch and bring your phone. That's our best price ever on unlimited welcome, with autopay plus taxes and fees, guaranteed for 3 years. Because at Verizon, we got you. Visit your local DC Verizon store today. $20 monthly promo credits apply over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate. Additional terms and conditions apply.
But that being said, let's dive into our coverage of season 2, episode 6. Why don't you go ahead and give us the very short but informative plot summary for this episode?
It sticks to the landing. So we are at The Walking Dead, Dead City, season 2, episode 6. Bridge partners are hard to come by these days. Here's the plot summary. Maggie and Herschel battle a deadly bear inside Bruegel's museum, forcing Herschel to prove himself. Meanwhile, Negan seizes control by defeating and exiling the Croat. As tensions peak, Ginny's worsening condition adds new emotional stakes.
It's a simple summary this week.
Yeah, it leaves out the entire Pearly subplot, but okay, we'll talk about that.
Oh, let's just start over and I'll add it in there. It's fine.
Yeah, oh, no. We keep going. We plug through.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't add any of the Pearly stuff
it's
in there.
It's okay. But that's why we talk about the episode. You know, that's just to whet the appetite.
But I mean, compared again, like as we said at the top of the episode, comparatively from last week to this week, it's a much more involved storyline. Trimming that fat last week has really made this a lot more of a cohesive story now, where we trimmed off the loose ends, we brought more characters together, and now because we're down to we're down to Negan, Maggie, Herschel, Ginny, Pearly, Croat, and Bruegel. Those are our main characters now.
That's who we know.
We don't have to worry about the Foragers. We don't have to worry about Roxana. We don't have to worry about Lucia. We don't have to worry about Christos. We can eliminate all of them, and now we can really push this story forward.
Yes.
And even so, like, even a character who we could have had more with, which was Annie and Josh,
mm-hmm.
we don't even have them now, because
we'll get to that, because I'm really excited to dive into what happened in that scene. Because the second time I watched it again with a couple of different plausible scenarios, and I don't know where exactly I land on Negan's motivations for his actions on that one.
Okay. So where do you want to start with this one?
Do you just want to kind of maybe start at the top? So essentially Maggie, Herschel, and Bruegel and Pearly are all at Bruegel's shelter. He's kind of being hospitable, but also letting them know, like, hey, I'm totally going to double cross Negan and the Dama and all that. I just want the methane, and I am here for colonization. Colonize me, which I don't trust at all. I don't trust anything Bruegel says.
Kim Coates eats the scenery, man. Oh, he is.
It's a 4-course meal.
Yeah, like chewing it is the actual term. I don't know why I said eats, but yeah, he chews up the scenery like crazy. He has been, in just the couple episodes we've seen him in, he has been such an amazing addition to this story.
He's one of the most charming, diabolical bastards that I can't wait to find out more of. Then he could be anyone. He was trained by Warren Buffett.
I caught that too. Like,
what? You learned bridge from Warren Buffett? Who were you, Bruegel? I'm thinking finance bro of the nth degree. Like,
like
a finance billionaire type.
That's guy. What I said, or that's what I said a couple episodes ago.
He
I
was
like,
a
he's
Wall Street dude.
He's a Wall Street guy.
Yep.
He has to be.
He's Michael Douglas in
Wall Street.
In Wall Street, yeah.
But he is such a charming villain.
Oh, I love him.
At the same time, like when he has all of them sitting at the table and he's pouring wine and he gets to Ginny's glass and he's like, can I see your ID? It's a special occasion. We'll treat this like Europe, as he's pouring her wine anyway. Like,
and
he and Herschel, he is so fucking charming as a villain that I almost can't stand it. And I know he's going to be, by the end of this season, he is going to be the big bad.
Oh, he's the big bad. But
yes,
the thing I love the most about him is he is not hiding anything about himself. He is 100% authentic 100% of the time. He plays the game and he withholds what he needs to withhold. But even when they're talking about the pros and cons of colonization, like, he lays out, he is in it to win it. Like, he is not a good person and he accepts that and he has no problem with that. And I find that to be the most fascinating. Like, he knows what he is and he's cool with it. And he's really, really smart.
Yeah, he's incredibly smart. And I love the fact that at one point during that conversation, he's like, have you ever seen Jefferson crossing the Delaware? And like, Maggie immediately interrupts that because, you know, Maggie's the one that burned it. You know, in the earlier episode, yeah, that's not Herschel why she
Herschel burned it.
Well,
to cause a distraction,
Herschel, Maggie, that group that of
contingent.
People.
Contingent. Okay. Yes. All right.
That contingent. But it's, I'm almost wondering, like, with everything, the fact that he's laying out his plans front and center to everybody in the room, is it a matter of being smart or is it a matter of being just overconfident? It could be a little of column A, a little of column B at the same time.
That would be my vote. I think he is extremely capable and he knows it. And he knows he's got the BDE energy over everybody else in the room and he's going to flaunt it a little bit.
It was funny too in that scene when he brings them all in and he invites them all in to sit at the table, he's holding the gun. And yes. He's like, oh, I haven't seen one of these in a while. Like, would have been nice if there were a couple rounds in it, but you know, it's a nice piece for the museum.
Right.
He's looking at the fact that he's looking at a gun as a piece of history.
Yeah.
Means that similarly to the Dama, he is somebody who is looking forward to the future and not living in the past. He's looking at a gun, which is arguably a more powerful weapon than that he has right now. Actually, I take that back because now that complicates things. I said that he's somebody he's not living in the past, but he's looking to the future, as in looking at a gun as a piece of history. But he's somebody who keeps and uses medieval weapons. So right. Maybe he is living too far in the past.
Okay. I mean, his outfit sure as hell screams 1600s. So there's that.
Edgar Allan Poe. I mean,
fantastic. Fantastic. I wonder, it's going to be very fascinating to find out. And again, I think because of whatever the hell upbringing and existence he had before everything fell, I think might help explain why he is the way he is. And they're giving us nuggets. They're giving us little nuggets. And I appreciate that the exposition on Bruegel is coming bit by bit and piece by piece. And we're not just getting a massive dump of information about who he used to be. It's truly a mystery who he is. And I love it.
It is. I mean, you're right. We're getting those little nuggets, like the little Warren Buffett, you know, tidbit about it. The fact that he knows about the arts. We were getting similar little nuggets about the Dama until it was fully revealed.
Right.
By Ben sitting at Bruegel's table of all places.
True.
So I have a feeling we will find out more about Bruegel by the end of this season. But I'm sticking to our theory that he's a Wall Street guy. It really plays into everything. Like, it plays into the fact that he's a bridge player, the fact that he knows Warren Buffett, or he knew Warren Buffett, the fact that he is an art appreciator, meaning he has value for high valued things.
And here's, not to interrupt, but before I lose the thought, because I've already lost it twice now, here is where I think he diverges, in that he beat the old world. Like, he did it. He's been there. He's done that. He beat it. He won. And now he's got this new world and he wants to win this game too. Because again, I'm guessing he was that level of powerful on Wall Street that he won the game of life in that succession way. But then the world fell and he still found a way to keep winning. And I think it is that winning that really drives him. And the redefinition of winning is going to keep him going and keep him current. crazy.
Well, I mean, yeah, you mean you look at Wall Street People and a lot of them look at it as if, especially if they're playing with other people's money, they look at it as a game. Like it's a game to who's going to win, who's going to win more money, especially because, like I said, they're not playing with their own. They're playing with other people's money. And you have to be really smart to be a successful broker in that sense.
Yes.
And his intelligence definitely goes past just the Wall Street thing. I mean, you look at somebody who's on Wall Street and how they always try to find legal ways to get insider information about trades and things like that. And then you get to the end of this episode and he has all this insider information on Pearly.
Yep.
And how did he get it? He captured Lucia before she turned.
And she was more than willing to spill her guts about all the traitors that just left her to die.
Yeah.
And so, all right. So I guess it's okay maybe to just kind of split the episode between the Negan storyline and the Maggie storyline. So, because we're already halfway there. So with the Maggie storyline then, with Bruegel and all that, do you want to talk about Herschel a little bit?
I mean, I don't see why we shouldn't. This story, we're going to end up jumping around because we always do. But
it's true.
There's a lot of development to the Maggie Herschel story in this episode. So much so to the fact that Herschel leaves at the end. By the end of this episode, he walks out on Maggie.
Chooses his own path. Yeah.
I have to say, though, this episode had a number of holy shit / what the fuck moments for me.
Okay.
Meaning I said those words out loud at particular moments of this episode.
So what moment is making you think that right now?
So Herschel capturing the zombie blood.
Yeah.
And willing to put it into the water to poison everyone.
Yep.
Was a true, like, I watched that scene and I was like, what the fuck, dude? Like, where did you learn this? I mean,
I think the Dama told him last when he burned Delaware or Washington crossing the Delaware and Herschel and the Dama ran into each other. I think she gave him the order.
But here's the thing, though, is he so blinded by the Dama's influence? Because at this point, he looks at Maggie, who's lying sleeping on the cot. He goes, he pierces the neck of the walker. He captures the blood. Let's say he accomplishes what he meant to do. And he pours the blood into the water supply. He's so blinded by that. If in fact he was given this order, given this information by the Dama, he's so blinded by the Dama's influence that he's not realizing that his mother is still in this place. And there is a potential that she could drink that water.
I had that thought too. Like, damn, Herschel, are you not going to warn your mom that you just poisoned the water hole?
Yeah. Oh my God.
I know. Damn it. I wanted it. I wanted to break you. And I did it. And I'm so
happy.
Son
of a bitch. The moment you said that, I'm like, somebody poisoned the water hole.
I know you. Everyone listening thought that. That's ever seen Toy Story.
You don't realize, like, you are so blinded. You're so narrow-minded in that moment. It's clever. Don't get me wrong. It's incredibly clever.
It's a very smart way to do it.
Yeah, like, you basically can get everybody in one shot without them even knowing.
Ricin attack. Like, it's the perfect untraceable crime.
Yeah, but you are taking a chance that Maggie and Ginny are also potentially going to drink that water.
Yep. And
he
just doesn't seem to care. Or he's, to your point, so blinded he doesn't even see that far into the consequential future. But thankfully Maggie caught him, and in the most defiant way possible, he poured that blood out on the ground. And like, that was her moment of saying, oh my God, my kid is a sociopath that burns cats. Like, that was her finally saying, it's not just a phase, Colin. I see.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I was really worried in that moment. And because of that fact that was so careless, you know, you're right. He could have warned Maggie or you know, his whole intention was to poison that blood and then was to poison that water and then leave. It'd be one thing.
We assume.
Yeah. I think he was planning on leaving. He had his
abandoned Maggie.
He had his backpack on when he was doing it.
God, why does he hate her so much?
Well, he kind of reveals that a little bit. And
well, actually, that's a really good point.
You know, he has such a resentment for his mom at this point that even when he says it, like even when they were there, she was not there. You know, she physically was there, but right. She
mentally has never been there.
Mentally and emotionally, she's never been there for him.
And I see it, and that sucks, and that's tough. And the actors have done a phenomenal job of showing that history without us having to watch that history. And I truly do feel it. I believe it. Lauren Cohen is always phenomenal, but Logan Kim just delightful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't question it at all. I mean,
no, it's very, you can tell it's very authentic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's completely authentic. I don't question any of that one single bit. Let me look at my notes here.
I mean, if we're talking about Herschel, we could talk about when he tries to exit and we run into one of the more interesting animal attacks in Walking Dead history.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Like
if this was an episode of Game of Thrones, it would have been called The Bear and the Farmer or something like that. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed from the same group that gave us the world's worst deer at the county fair from hell. I thought that the one-eyed bear, not half bad. Was it a nod to the movie Brave? Perhaps, but I enjoyed it.
You know what? I'm actually right there with you. Like I'm watching this episode and I remember actually saying to myself, like, you know what? Like this bear actually looks pretty realistic. Like
for Walking Dead, I was pretty happy with that one.
I'm not questioning this at all. I mean, I hate admitting this, but there was a part of me that when the bear was standing up on its hind legs, I was like, oh, he's cute. he's like Winnie the Pooh.
There was some cuddliness there with that bear. Like I didn't hate him. I didn't
it's
hate
like,
him.
Oh, he only has one eye. I want to hug him.
He's misunderstood, man. He's had a tough couple of goes at it too. Like he just... My man, she could have just trapped him in the cage and then boom, brew, you own a bear. Although, did you see them wheelbarrowing the bear meat at the next morning?
Yeah.
I love that. I was like, at least she left a good-ass parting gift.
It's so funny that you say, like, you could have trapped him in the cage and Bruegel would have owned a bear, because there was a part of me that actually thought that exact thing. I'm like, trap him in the fucking center cage.
It would have been so easy. And then you have a bear.
And then Bruegel's got a new champion to fight against nobody else because he killed everyone.
And it's a bear.
And it's a bear. Exactly.
Shira couldn't.
Can you imagine like taking that bear to a competition being like, your zombie looks a lot like a bear.
Pay no attention. He's Ukrainian. No, I don't.
It's just the armor he's in.
It's just the armor.
I put him in a bear skin rug.
No offense. No. Peta. No. So I love that Logan Kim got to really show off his throwing skills, murdering a CGI bear. Nicely done. This is the second week in a row, I guess, that the spikes on top of the octagon came into play, in which it murdered the bear this week, and it really messed up Tony last week. So love seeing that happen.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, we also have to make mention, too, that we see Herschel's knife skills come into play.
He's good.
He has, I don't know if he's been training since he left the bricks, but he had two direct hits into that bear, direct and targeted hits, because the other one took out the bear's other eye.
Sure did. Well, and if you'll remember at the end of the season premiere, it showed him in his room in like that Cobra Kai level montage moment, throwing the knives at the door. And like he was at the end nailing it against the door. And I'm like, all right.
Well, he gets the last one. Like, I think a couple bounce off and then he gets the last one before it goes to black and
right.
The episode ends. But that's what I'm saying. Like, he had two really good hits and from a high advantage point, too,
that's true.
Needed to be precise throws.
Well,
so
as something Obi-Wan Kenobi taught us, all you need is the high ground.
That's true. You were my friend, Anakin. He clearly has been practicing, mm-hmm. since that time on the bricks.
Yep.
So, I mean, and it's paid off because as much as him and Maggie had it out, he saved Maggie's life. Maggie was a goner if not for Herschel.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely. And I found it interesting that the next morning, both Maggie and Herschel are gone. And like, that's where Brogle, there you go, buddy. That's where Brogle gets to really kind of suss it out with Pearly. Like, all right, what kind of relationship are we about to have? Are we about to be a friendship or am I about to own your ass? And at the end of the day, he ended up owning his ass. And that's unfortunate.
It goes back to that intelligence that we talked about that Brogle has. I love that we just keep calling him Brogle.
Me too. Knowledge is power.
That Brogle has, you're right. And the fact how he acquired that knowledge was incredibly creative.
Brilliant.
Incredibly slimy at the same time, to the fact that he still had Lucia.
Just to show her to Pearly.
Yeah.
That's the only, because then he killed her. So it was like, all right.
Yeah, her job was done.
But you know what? And this is where the show is less than Fear of the Walking Dead. All right, listeners. So hear me out here, okay? Because they gave us that explanation for how Brogle was able to find these survivors, it answered a pretty interesting plot hole from last week. I was curious of like, oh, that's really convenient that he just so happens to show up right where they needed him to show up at the right time. No, he got that information from Lucia and was able to find that. So I appreciated them not retconning, but explaining after the fact how he was able to happen upon them. Like that was all planned. That was not happenstance.
Well, I agree and I disagree because Brogle still had to find Lucia in the park. So because he says he found her after she was bit and she was like, she had a number of bites, she was bleeding out. He found her that way. So he had to have been in the park already to find her. And he had to be relatively close because she wasn't lasting that long.
Correct. And I think we kind of learned that when they went back to his spot that they are kind of close. So therein lies my question to you. Do you believe that Edgar Allan Coates did not know about the foragers? Because he said he didn't know, but I don't believe that. I think he knew about them, but didn't see them as a threat, so he let them do their thing.
I don't buy that for a second either. Okay. I think he totally knew about the foragers.
So
I
maybe
think
he was monitoring their situation, saw that there was this like bonfire in the middle of Central Park, and was like, huh, let me go send some guys to see what the hell's going on there. I think it could have been interesting. Like, I could see him having some influence on just checking things out too. I don't know.
It's the whole, like, the fact that he knew, as big as Central Park is, the fact that he came across them only gives me that inclination that he already knew where they were.
Yes, I agree with you 1,000%. I agree. Yes. He knew where they were. He just had to wait for the right moment to intervene.
But you're also right. There also was a big ass bonfire happening at that time too.
And a lot of moaning.
Well, that too. Well, the moaning could have come from, they could have heard that and it could have come. I don't know if you would have been able to distinguish where they were just from the moaning. But I think it was Lucia and the New Babylon people that lit the fire.
Yes. Yes.
Stupidly,
which again made it seem very much like a Seraphite ritual. I don't know if anyone else got that vibe. It was very Seraphinian.
Yeah, you were ready. Instead of slicing them open, they were hanging them.
Yep. So, and I did like when someone pointed out the Gregory parallel. I also like the comic book parallel of Maggie almost strangling herself after her dad died in the comic, if I remember correctly.
Did you call her Naggy?
Maybe. Yeah. Didn't mean to.
Hey, look, there have been times this season that's been appropriate.
I mean, I'll tell you what, man. As a parent of two kids, sometimes you got to nag. It's the only way to get things done.
I will admit, Maggie and Herschel having it out finally about all of this. And Herschel really, really letting out his feelings. Like, he's not holding back anymore at this point. I was a little conflicted because you're right. It is something that needed to be done. It was two people who really needed to, Herschel more than Maggie,
yes,
really needed to express what he was feeling. However, I'm conflicted because I did kind of get this whole, like, you're a little brat, like you're a little monster kind of implication from all of that too. But it's the reason why I'm conflicted about that is because that's not his doing. That is somebody else's influence that is causing them to think this way. And it's even more complicated when you realize that the person that made him think this way is no longer one of this world.
I will challenge that as, did she make him think this way or let him know that it's okay to think this way? I think she encouraged what was already there as opposed to planting something there. There's something about Herschel that makes me feel like he actually is like this chosen one of the Dhamma's vision of what the new world could look like. The way he looks at it, the way he sees the beauty in the new world is something that she was very into. And I think all she did was stoke the fire that was already lit in him.
You might have a really good point about that too, especially when you think about and consider what he said to Maggie in this episode, the whole, like, you were there, but you weren't actually there. Like, these are very clearly suppressed feelings that he has been having for a while. I mean, there's no way. Yeah. There's no way that the Dhamma can make him feel these things unless he was already feeling them. Cause she doesn't know his at home situation. Right. She can't force him to think your mother was never there for you, even though she was there. Cause she doesn't know. She doesn't know any of this. So you're probably right. It could be she gave him the power to realize that it's okay to think these things.
Yes, that is what I truly do believe, because when you think about it from Herschel's point of view, I don't know how old he is. Let's say he's 16. For all 16 years of his life, the old world has made his mother miserable and distant and cold and detached. So why would he try to bring back something that causes so much pain for his mom?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, no, that's a really good point. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see, because now Herschel is off on his own.
Yes. And he's going to find out that his North Star is extinguished and what happens next. And what happens when he finds out that inadvertently slash purposefully, like, okay, let's say that Herschel has adopted the Dhamma as his surrogate mother and Glenn is his father. So now Negan's responsible for both of his parents' deaths, quote unquote, if the Dhamma is a surrogate mother. Is that going to make him super angry at Negan and, like, finally give him a legitimate reason to want to kill him?
Here's the thing. I honestly don't think Herschel is that mad at Negan to begin with.
I don't either, but I think that they want us to feel that he is. I don't think he is, but I feel like the storytelling has told us to believe that Herschel is conflicted about wanting to kill Negan or something about that. Like, when I think back to the Tallgrass episode, maybe episode 4, and the fact that Herschel had the gun pointed right at him and purposefully missed. Like, he's a good enough shot. I bet he could have not missed that poorly. I'm brought back to that moment of conflict and wondering, what were they telling us there? What do you think of that?
I don't. Yeah, I mean, and that's just it. I mean, we've heard Herschel tell Maggie, like, he never, like, this whole thing about Negan killing Glenn and you having issues with this and you not being able to get over this, this is on you. I never met him,
right?
Like, to resent Negan for what he did. So I think that whole scene with Herschel pointing the gun at Negan and pulling the trigger and missing the shot was purely because of what Maggie instilled in him. He's never developed his own opinion on any of this.
Yeah.
It's always just been what's been thrown at him and what's been, you know, fed to him by Maggie, who now he resents Maggie as well, which I'm sure conflicts his thoughts on Negan. So I don't know. It's
go ahead. How could it not? And yep. It's again, there are pieces of the storytelling here that are really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. And the Herschel Maggie dynamic and what it did this week and all of that really evolved. And again, we talked about it a little bit ago, but by narrowing the focus and the scope of the show again and bringing it to be much more compact and much more together, we're able to have really, really good character developing storylines and story beats, and we're able to finally have mystery. We have time to have mystery because we're not cramming 8 different groups of storylines into one episode. Like, and I'm really excited to see what keeps happening because the Herschel stuff, fascinating. Fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, especially now that, you know, we've been getting all this great stuff from the Herschel storyline, and as many people have said through feedback and such, how it's the most intriguing part of the season. We've been following along with Herschel being present in the story, but now we're moving to a new phase where it becomes even more intriguing because now Herschel's not there.
Yep.
He's gone. He is off. He's looking for the Dhamma. Nobody knows where he is at this point because we get at the end of this episode, Maggie goes to Negan because that's where she thinks. It's not necessarily going to Negan. It's going to where Negan is.
It's going to the one person in the city that you know that you can get information from that might know something. More than anything, I think it's her one friend in the city.
Well, I don't even think it's that. I don't even think she intentionally went to Negan. It just happens that Negan happens to be there because that's where the Dhamma was supposed to be. And it just so happens that she sees Negan, walks out of the building because of all of this. I don't think she went there intentionally looking for Negan.
No, I would agree emphatically. But before we get to the Negan and Maggie scene, what do you say we rewind and explain how we got here with Negan? We are 47 minutes into the recording. I don't know what it's going to be on the playback, but we have not talked about Negan and the Croat and all that yet. And I think it's time we switch. What do you think?
I'm totally fine with that because this is a big switch for this series, for this dynamic between these characters. And I praise you for keeping spoilers under control.
It was so hard
yesterday.
It was not the easiest thing in the world, Beck, because I knew so much.
Because when we recorded last night on episode 5, I had said, like, I want to see, like, Negan take control and, you know, but this is going to be a different Negan. He's not going to be, you know, the Negan of old who ran the sanctuary before. There's going to be a new sanctuary. And it feels like in this episode, that is actually exactly what we're heading towards. That whole conversation, and I know this is getting a little ahead of going back to the beginning with Negan, but that whole conversation between Negan and Ben in Negan's cell was so fucking, I don't even know what to say about it. Like, when he says in that conversation, it wasn't the out, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was like he brought people in to try and save them, but what they needed to be saved from was already there.
Yes.
Meaning himself.
And damn it, Ben, we're going to get to my thoughts on that because, again, you and I are going to have different opinions, and it's a great,
okay.
I'm hoping the storytelling benefits the story. So essentially we start with Negan inspecting the dead Dhamma and mm-hmm. the Croat telling him what happened. I have to wonder, did someone stab her in the back of the head before, or was she going to turn, or did she burn away from turning? I don't know how that works. I don't think you can burn away from turning. I remember the people in Atlanta fused into the pavement. So I'm guessing somebody stabbed her in the back of the head. But in case anyone was wondering, I already thought that through for you. You're welcome. but I really, really thought that the Croat was going to figure out faster that Negan was behind the death of the rat than he did. What about you? Because like that whole scene, I thought he already knew. And it took me until the second viewing to really appreciate what happened in that scene and Negan asking essentially for his freedom and the crowd saying, yeah, dude, I don't give a shit. Go ahead. Whatever.
No, I think the timing fit. I don't think it was rushed and I don't think it was too slow. I think the timing was actually pretty good because you're right. We get that scene where, you know, Negan says to the Croat, like, okay, so what does this mean for me? And, you know, Croat's like, no, you did your part. You lived up to it. You're free. Your family's going to be here tomorrow. You can stay. You can go.
Whatever you want.
Whatever you want to do. And I actually liked that because
humanity.
We questioned last week as to what the Croats' feelings were. Well, I say last week, meaning last week's episode. It was actually last night. But
sure.
we questioned his relationship with Negan. And I actually like that too, because that there's a lot that plays into that. By Negan asking him, what does this mean for me? Negan could have said, okay, I'm done now.
Yep.
But instead he asks.
He did.
Which shows respect to the Croat. Like, he actually, that made the Croat feel like, guess what, buddy? You're in charge now. You know, people are going to turn to you, not me. And I think that was always Negan's intention. Like, what do you think?
So here's my question to you. And this is something I thought while I was watching the episode. But last week when Negan was needling the Croat with the stuff about the Dama, I thought he was just needling him. But as I watched this week's episode, I actually think there was genuine care in, like, I feel like Negan does care about the Croat, and he didn't appreciate the way that the Dama was treating him, and he did think that he deserved more. And I want to know what you think about their actual friendship, because I got a sense today that for all of the Croat's weaknesses, these are some dudes that went through some shit together, and they were kind of sharing a smoke, and, like, I don't know. I thought the friendship was real. What do you think?
No, I'm with you. I actually do think it was real as well, because when we get that, well, another one of the oh shit moments from this episode, the boot, exactly, when Negan is lying back and he's got his feet up and Croat sees the boot.
Yep.
I legit said, oh shit.
I went, ah, fuck.
Yep. And then that's when it clicks with the Croat, and he's, yes, like, you fed me all of that about the rat. The Croat realizes in that moment that Negan turned him on the Dama. Yep. And Negan legitimately is like, no, like, I saved you.
And he's right.
I made you realize what was actually happening, and I let you take control. And you're right. He was right. He was actually saving him, to the point where when they start to fight, Croat runs for Lucille and turns her on, and, like, he's actually, Negan's taking a couple hits. When he gets him back, the old Negan, Croat was dead.
Yes. This guy was hurt. This guy.
Yep.
This Negan saw the monster that he created, felt responsible, and, like, and I guess that's where I wanted to know about what you thought about the Negan and the Croat of it all. It's, what level of culpability is he now accepting for what's going on now? Does he feel like the Barazzi are his children because he created the Croat and he failed the Croat, and that's and the Croat created the Barazzi, and now he has to protect the Barazzi? Like, what's going through Negan's head? Which I know is a tall question to ask.
I didn't go that far. Okay. I never went as like, oh, the Croat created the Barazzi, and because Negan created the Croat, it's because I don't honestly believe, as much as they say in that scene, you know, like, I created you. I'm the reason why you are the way you are. I don't know if I buy that, because the story that we got from season one, when we got Stephen Ogg come back for you know, the flashback, the Croat was already crazy.
Yes.
Negan just made him a different kind of crazy. So I don't know if I buy Negan made him who he is, or he's responsible for who he is.
Okay.
I think maybe they believe that simply because they spent that much time together, but I don't necessarily believe that is the truth.
Okay. Or maybe you could even argue that Negan's saying that this current ideation of the Croat, with the swagger and with the Barazzi that are essentially the Savers, like, he made this version of him, not all the pieces, but the costume that he's wearing, the Negan costume he's wearing, that's what Negan made.
Okay, that I can definitely see.
Because let me ask you this. I lost my train of thought. It was right there.
That's
fine.
I
swear to God. It's going to come back, and it's going to be great. Because
I get it.
A really good point. But
going back to my earlier point, when that fight ends, and Croat has clearly taken a couple hits of his own at this point because Negan was able to get control of Lucille. Again, if this was the old Negan, Croat was dead.
Yes.
He was lined up. He was taking a bashing to the head and he was done. But instead, he banishes him. He says, just don't come back. Like, he lets him go.
He does. But if Negan didn't feel responsible for what happens to the Barazzi, why didn't he leave with Annie and Joshua? Why did he stay?
Because Negan, he even says this when he's talking to Maggie. Negan feels like he is cursed to always fall into these situations where somebody is going to force him to do things he doesn't want to do or force him to be a person he just doesn't want to be anymore. And he doesn't want to put that on Annie and Josh. Annie and Josh are better off without him in his life because if they can get to him, they can get to them. And clearly that's already been established because the Dama was able to get to them. Yep. They knew they were in Tennessee. She brought them to Tennessee. He is, as heartbreaking as it is, he's better. He knows they are better off without him.
That's true. And I guess go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think the Croat situation and banishing the Croat and the Annie and Josh situation, I don't feel are connected. I think they are, and they're conflicted. They're conflicted in the sense of Negan's inner struggle with himself and the person that he is.
And this is where I'm going to go right back on my soapbox that I love so much.
Sure.
In that I think it would be a very, very daring choice and a great choice if what this did was it turned Negan into someone that was self-imploding, that he was so upset with himself by how everything, that he slipped right back into Savior Negan because he had so much self-loathing, he turned into the worst version of himself. And I think that would be dynamic storytelling. I don't think it's going to happen, but they did kind of set breadcrumbs if they want to go down that road.
I agree with you. That would be dynamic storytelling. I don't see that happening at all for two main reasons. One, again, that speech that he has with Ben.
Let's talk about that scene a little bit.
He knows in that scene, that whole, like I said, when he says, again, paraphrasing, that the thing they should have been protected from was inside with them.
Yep.
He knows who he used to be and how bad of a person that was. And I can, like, you know, the fact that he's screwing with Ben, he's playing, it's like jokingly friendly playing with him, like, right. Not like
teasing him.
Yeah. He's teasing him a little bit, making him think he's really the bad guy, but he's not. And I can see there being a situation where he again is forced to be a person that he doesn't want to be if it comes down to Negan and the Barazzi versus Bruegel and his gang, because then it's for the sake of survival.
Yes.
I can see that. And I could see, even with that speech with Ben, I could even see, like, okay, he knows who he was, so he might have to go back to that before, especially because of the fact that he sent Annie and Josh away. It kind of opens him up to do that. Even that, I could say, okay, I can see where you're coming from. It's dynamic storytelling to make Negan kind of self-implode and go back to who he was. The thing that makes me convinced that it's not going to happen is the final scene of this episode with Ginny. When Ginny collapses in front of him,
he's a broken man,
and he embraces her, he has something again.
Humanity again.
In that moment, you can, with no words being spoken, the smile of gratefulness and happiness and relief when he sees Ginny, even though she's pointing a gun at him, speaks volumes about how much, how happy he is to see her, regardless of the situation. And when she collapses and he embraces her, it's almost as it's comforting.
Yes.
He was feeling so lost before he walked out of that theater because he had just sent Annie away. He had just sent Josh away. You know, he had that conversation with Maggie. I do think he legitimately felt broken and lost more so than ever before. Ginny brought him back. Just seeing him.
Yeah.
Brought him back.
And I'm really excited to see, as you know, King George said, what comes next? We got what, 2 episodes left?
Holy two hell. Episodes left. Yeah. That,
so we got so I am a whore for a good penultimate episode. And
me
I
too.
Really excited to see what they do, because with the pieces that are in play, let's set the stage for what we even have left to do. So we got Ginny with Negan. We got the Croat on his own. We got Maggie looking for Herschel. Herschel looking for Dama. And we got Pearly and Bruegel doing their mustache twirling things, right? Is that pretty much where the stage is?
I think it's pretty clear. I mean, we've got... I mean, if you... It's going to be interesting because, again, looking to the future, even though we haven't seen the episode yet, if you look at the coming attractions, there's a new interesting dynamic that I don't think we ever predicted happening that's going to be happening next episode.
I forget what was on the coming attractions.
It's Maggie and Croat.
Yes, and I am really interested. So here's the thing. Here's the thing about the Croat. First off, I love him. And second off, I don't want him to go anywhere. I want him to be a complicated individual. I want him to be the Ben Linus of this show, man.
I so knew you were going to say Ben Linus. I so knew it. I knew it.
But he has that potential, man. Like, he's smart as hell. The dude figured out how to turn zombies into methane, okay? The guy is a smart cookie.
So I'm glad you said that, because that, to me, was the only issue I had with Negan banishing the Croat.
Yes. He lost your scientist.
You lost your scientist. He is the one who is responsible for coming up with this technology for producing or capturing the methane that the walkers produce that is giving you the power that you have, both in like electricity power and power.
Yes. Yes.
And you just let him, you walk just kicked him, you just kicked nothing. Him out.
And it's just, it's weird. And if it's a power struggle, then why, or was it a self-preservation? Like, you know, banish the Croat before the Croat can kill me or something? Like, why couldn't you just have him as a number two? Probably couldn't trust him. I don't know. But I'm intrigued to see what happens when the Croat mixes with Maggie and what comes from that. And what happens when Herschel sees Maggie working with the Croat? Like, is he gonna be like, Mom, why do you just hate me so much?
Well, and because I have a feeling, because Negan tells Maggie, if he's anywhere that the Dama would have been, it's
the church.
It's the church at 45th and 6th or 46th and 5th,
whatever it was.
Yeah. And I have a feeling that's also where the Croat is going. When he got banished, it's a comforting area for him too, sense. Because he has that same relationship with the Dama.
Yep.
So he's going to go to where he know another place that he knows that he has been, he's comfortable with because of the Dama, and that's where he's going. That's where the Croat is going to.
It makes sense. And it makes sense that's honestly where the head is headed and where the next stage of the evolution of the storytelling is going to go. I mean, so let's think here. Bruegel wants to eliminate Negan and the Barazzi so that he can steal the methane. Pearly is along for the ride because LOL blackmail. Again, yeah. Maggie's looking for Herschel and she's going to do so with the Croat. And again, we got 2 episodes left. I'm really excited to see where we go from here, because there's a lot of things at play. I don't know what we're going to do about our dearest Ginny and her horrible infection. I don't know if they have penicillin or Z-Pack.
It looks like they also go to a hospital at some point in the next episode as well.
Okay.
So I have a feeling we're going to see a little bit of a breakaway with Negan trying to save Ginny. But I mean, the other thing we have to mention as well too, is that Maggie at this point is insistent on leaving. Like, yes. their whole plan before Herschel went off on his own was, regardless of what happens next, they're going home. They're going back to the bricks.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But Maggie is literally the only one in the party that wants to do that. Herschel doesn't want to. Ginny doesn't want to. Negan's not gonna. So I know that that's what Maggie wants, but it's almost so. It's hard to tell. Is it selfish for her to want to do that with everyone when she's the only one that wants to do it? But it's also the safest bet of all the other options. Like, it's safer than New York City. So
I don't think it's selfish at all. I think it's for protection for her and Herschel. Yeah, preservation. Okay. Exactly. All right. Cool. This is not her war. She has nothing to do with the methane. She is so not true. There to claim it. She went to the city because she was forced to by New Babylon, and Herschel went with her, and now she just wants to get her and Herschel home. And she doesn't care what happens to Negan. She doesn't care what happens to in the war for the city. It's not her war.
But it is. But it is, because she's a part of New Babylon, because New Babylon took over their land by force, essentially, like with treaty, but still. So it is like she wants to go back to the bricks, but as of right now, the bricks is still a New Babylon supported settlement. So whether it's her war or not, she's in it. She's playing the game now. Just like what Brogel said to Pearlie, one way or another, buddy, you're in the game now. Maggie can't just leave. She's in the game now. She has to accept, I'm in the game. I got to fight in this war, or else there is no resolution.
I don't know if I buy that, because because then what's Maggie's purpose?
She's always been. But she hasn't. Who is she leading?
Exactly, who is she leading?
New Babylon.
She has nobody to lead.
But what if she? You're right, because she's not asking for that position, and she has not. But she could, because Pearlie's not a leader. Pearlie's a hell of a follower. Pearlie is one of the best followers you're ever going to find. I am not believing that Pearlie is a leader. No one else in that party is a leader except for Maggie, and I think that matters. And I think that's one of those, like, this is her dark days of Bruce Wayne before she realizes I am the Batman and it's okay to be the Batman. Like, I still think Maggie's going to unlock, and she's just treading water until that moment happens. She's getting badass. It's going to happen.
I don't know. I don't.
I hope so. At least
I don't.
We'll see. Time will tell.
I don't see a place for Maggie in this war. I really don't. Okay. She never wanted the methane.
Nope.
She worked with Babylon against her will. So I don't think she ever has any intention of going back and taking her city back either. I think she just wants her biggest objective is to get Herschel home.
Yes. Yes, I agree with you. Her objective is to just get back to normalcy. I don't think her destiny is that, though. Her destiny is not to stay out of this fight, no matter how badly she wants to. I don't know. I'm a once upon a time guy. It's not in her destiny.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Out. I mean, we have two more episodes left of this season. We didn't talk about this last night when we recorded episode 5, but there is rumor out there that seasons 3 and 4 are actually going to begin filming back to back.
Yes.
And could potentially be the final two seasons of the series. So that's still rumor at this point. We don't know if that's actually going to happen. There has been no official announcement of the third season yet. I have a feeling we'll probably get something closer to the end of the season.
Absolutely. I could see it being a tag at the season finale of, like, Negan and Maggie will return in Dead City seasons 3 and 4 or something like that.
Well, you think this is Marvel?
Well, they want to be. Anyone that's building a franchise these days is just doing the Marvel model, but with their own flourish on it. It's just a different skin.
True. That's very true.
And you know what? Marvel did it. Like, they showed, they gave you the roadmap, so why not use it, you know?
That's true.
If you got the GPS, I mean, use it.
Hey, we have seen Jeffrey and Lauren in DC, so...
We have.
And funnily enough, as you made the reference, they were Batman's parents.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Damn.
They were, it all they were Bruce Wayne's...
circle, folks.
They were Bruce's parents in, what was it, BVS, I think? Batman vs. Superman?
Yes, yes, I believe so. I believe so.
Yeah, Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Lauren Cohan were... They were Bruce's parents.
I'm curious, who has died more on screen, Bruce's parents or Uncle Ben? We've had a lot of both deaths.
I'm going to say we're wrapping up our conversation, folks. So it's okay that we're doing this. I think it's Wayne and Martha.
It's the Waynes.
I think it's the Waynes.
I think it is too, because we only get Martin Sheen and then the Tobey Maguire.
Yes.
We didn't get the Tom Holland one.
No, Tom Holland was Aunt May.
Right, which was still pretty damn powerful.
Was the one that died. Now we're off on a tangent.
You're welcome, folks.
I love that movie, Way Home.
Oh, so good.
And I remember being in theater opening weekend for that movie.
Yep.
And when Marissa Tomei, who is amazing as Aunt May, when she says the words, with great power come great responsibility,
buckets.
The theater erupted in cheer. Yes. And as the pure comic book fan that I am, I'm like, why are you people cheering? Like, do you not realize this Aunt May is about to die? Like,
right.
Why are you cheering? I get that we heard like the iconic words, but it now means
goodbye.
Her time is coming. Like,
thankfully, it's the multiverse, so nothing and everything is in play.
Yeah. Spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen No Way Home at this point.
If you haven't seen No Way Home at this point, that's on you, not us.
Yeah, it's been a good amount of time. Any final notes on this episode?
Honest to goodness, again, I just want to give Lauren Cohan all of the props for an amazingly directed episode. I thought what she did with some of the looks of the bear scene was really, really impressive. I thought that she did a good job of using tone and lighting, and when she showed the relationship between the Croat and Negan, especially the direction of those scenes and the camera work there was really inspired. So Lauren Cohan, again, two hats off and all the accolades. Phenomenal job directing this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to just kind of mirror that as well, because you're right. There's so much. She did a great job of capturing the tension of that bear scene.
Yes.
There is actually a good amount of emotion in this episode. I talk about the end scene with Ginny and how Jeffrey was able to really portray a ton of like relief and happiness and comfort without saying a word, in just the actions of the look on his face seeing Ginny and then the embrace of Ginny when he picks her up after she collapses. This episode is so much better than last week's episode, and her directorial debut is because of that.
I'll be honest with you, as I was watching it a second time today, I thought to myself, is this one of my favorite episodes of Dead City so far? And it might be.
Honest, okay.
Of the entire, this was a really, really good episode because it was so tight and it was so insular and it really just moved the story forward. Again, I am blown away by, and I wonder if Jeffrey Dean Morgan's performance, which was top notch this week, was extra charged because his friend Lauren Cohan was making her directorial debut. I wonder if, I'm just asking questions about the psyche of an actor, in those moments, do you think Negan or Jeffrey extra brought it because he knew that like he really wanted to perform for his friend Lauren? I don't know, because he really crushed it this episode.
I think that's definitely the case. I think it's like, important. Hey, like this is your directorial debut. I'm going to do everything I can to make this shine.
Yep. 100%. And
yeah,
and crushed it. Did the job.
Yeah. I agree with you completely. Before we go into wrapping things up too, we don't do this often, but I wanted to make a recommendation to people for something else to check out. But it's in relation to this show because of the actor involved. I've been a Survivor fan for years, and I've watched particular seasons of The Amazing Race and things like that. If you haven't seen it, there's a new show that just started a couple weeks ago called Destination X.
Ooh.
And it is hosted by Jeffrey. It's hosted by Jeffrey Dean Morgan. It's an NBC show, so it's available on Peacock or on NBC, depending on how you want to watch it. And I watched it initially because I've met Jeffrey, I've worked with Jeffrey at shows and things like that. So anytime I become cordial with people like that, I want to support them in what they do. So I'm like, this is a new show that Jeffrey's hosting. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to check it out just to support him. I am so sucked into this show. It is ridiculous. I don't know if you know the premise of the show.
Yes, it is a Survivor / Amazing Race in which Jeffrey gets to mess with them.
It's kind of like an Amazing Race meets Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Hell yes. That's my bag.
Because he
is Carmen Sandiego.
He really almost kind of is.
I love it.
He takes them to... They cut off all their senses. Like, they wear these goggles so they can't see where they're going. They're on a bus that has no outside view of anything. And he just puts them in the middle of nowhere, somewhere in Europe, and gives them tasks and trivia to give them clues to try and find out where they are. And then at the end, they have to put their ex on a map where they think they are at that point from all the clues and the games and the tasks and everything. And the person furthest away on the map is the one that's eliminated.
Oh, that's good.
But it's so good because he's a charming host. The trivia is really great. I've enjoyed playing along because I'm really into history too. Nice. And there's a lot, they give a lot of history to the places that they're at. Like, the first city they were in was Rome. Then they were in Geneva for the second episode. I haven't watched the third episode yet because I'm still getting caught up from my Rhode Island weekend. But I'll probably watch it tomorrow. So I don't know where they are for the third episode. But if you're a fan of Jeffrey's, if you're a fan of kind of like Amazing Race kind of stuff, and you have the accessibility to watch it either on NBC or Peacock, check out Destination X. I'm really, really enjoying it.
Hell yeah. I'm excited to check it out for sure. For sure.
Cool. All right, that's our show, episode 653. Once again, thank you everybody for your patience as we got caught up, and thank you for listening.
Next up, Jason, Karen, and Lucy do a dive into 28 Days Later.
If you want to write in or leave them a voice message about your thoughts on 28 Days Later, you can find all of our contact information over at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, please check out our other podcast. You really need to check out the Cobra Kai cast. Perhaps it's the series finale. We'll never know. But they covered the new Karate Kid movie Legends. And if you check out the episode before that, you might hear a familiar voice. And if you're not in the mood for that, check out the Hey, 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 Run For Your Lives podcast as they go over the movie quotes whiz.
And I think they also just did Godzilla... Zero, whatever.
Shit. Yes.
Is it 01 or God? I don't know why I forgot what the name of that movie. Minus One. Sorry, Godzilla Minus One. Yes. They just covered that, which I still need to watch.
You do, Ben. You do. I haven't seen it, but I know that you need to watch it.
I'm very interested to see what Jason, Karen, and Lucy are going to say about 28 Days Later. It's already been recorded, but you can still leave feedback if you want. And that episode is going to be coming by the end of the week. And then you'll get to hear us again next week back on schedule for episode 7 of The Walking Dead, Dead City.
Woo! Can't wait.
Yeah, it's... And then after we wrap up our coverage in a matter of a week or two, the rewatch continues.
Thank goodness.
the rewatch starts back up, in which you and I are actually already slated for episodes of the rewatch a little ways down the road.
When Mr. Swish Smith goes to Virginia, for sure. That's when you'll... Guys, if you love us covering Negan, just wait until the rewatch gets to the Negan arc. You'll get plenty of Ben and me.
Yeah, it's almost fitting that you and I are taking...
The end and the beginning.
The end of... Yeah, the two episodes that are considered the first appearance of Negan.
For sure. I'm going to almost... preemptively challenge Jason that I think both of us should be on the Here's Negan episode when they get to it.
I'm already on it, so
that's true.
Again, we're a little ways away as far as the rewatch goes. I think over a year.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Over a year away of that episode even recording. But I remember Jason reaching out and being like, I still don't have anybody for season 7, episode 1. I'm like, well, I feel like it's only appropriate that I do that episode since we've been covering, Negan in this story. It'll be interesting going back too and kind of comparing Negans.
Yes. And
yeah.
I'm really excited to get back to that because I probably watched the series 3, maybe 4 times through. But now with the Dead City extension, with The Ones Who Live, with parts of Daryl, it is fun going back and watching with additional context added in.
Yeah, for sure. All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Don't get bit, James Gale Yunis.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.